Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Help me, Internet. Protect me against the trolls. Oh, hello. Welcome to Make Me Smart. I'm Molly Wood, and I am solo hosting again. Don't worry. Kai has not abandoned us. He will be back next week. He's in. I feel totally bad just outing it, but he's in management training, so he can't come today. And I bet he would rather be here. But I know that I am not really alone because, of course, I have all of you with me on our Make Me Smart journey because none of us is as smart as all of us. And with Kai gone, I decided to wade right into the weeds and get myself in a giant pile of trouble. We have been promising you a Tesla episode because there are so many things going on with Tesla, with Elon Musk himself, with electric cars, with maybe the stock market. So today we are going to tell you an epic story. It's about a man who's trying to beat all the odds, a man who could single-handedly disrupt the automotive and energy industries with a company called Tesla, a man who is starting wars, Twitter wars. And we're going to talk about how maybe part of the problem here is that, like, do we as a society and members of the media really need to keep creating this epic narrative about the single visionary who can transform everything all by himself? And we're going to talk about how Tesla is becoming an example of this weirdly polarized state of things right now, where the discussion is all extreme all the time, whether either Tesla will be a huge success and sell more cars than any car seller ever sold and transform energy usage and reverse climate change, or it's a giant fraud and a bubble and Tesla is going to vanish overnight, leaving only a ripple where a giant once stood. You see what I'm getting at here? It's a little extreme on both sides. And it's so extreme that I'm going to be honest with you guys. I am a little nervous even taking on this topic because there are some very passionate people on both sides of this discussion, and I think maybe some very passionate Twitter bots too. But we're doing it because it is a fascinating business culture and economic story. So here we go. To recap, Tesla's Model 3 car was supposed to be Elon Musk's answer to bringing the luxury brand to the mass market. It has, of course, had setbacks. It's had a very slow production rate. That has led to falling stock prices. Customers have canceled some of their car deposits. It was even reported on Sunday that Tesla has asked some suppliers to refund a portion of previous payments made by the company. That suggests the possibility that Tesla might have a little bit of a cash flow problem and be running out of money. However, on the plus side, reviews of the Tesla Model 3 are rolling in, and they are super great. The Wall Street Journal called it a thrilling modern marvel. That is good news. Tesla has never not made great cars. It's just whether it can make enough of them. And then, of course, there's Elon Musk. So let's start with the guy and this idea of the cult of personality, especially what happens when the personality is so big. I talked to Bloomberg reporter Max Chafkin, who first started reporting on Elon Musk in 2007, and I asked him if this recent behavior is normal for him.
That's kind of always been true. And I think to some extent, people just didn't notice it or because they didn't really care. So back in the old days, Elon Musk would routinely, you know, go to town on reporters for publications where he didn't like what they were writing. And it's almost always grounded in kind of engineering type stuff. And I don't think it's a coincidence that the thing that kind of caused this latest blow up where the Thai rescue diver who, you know, I think by most accounts is basically a hero, had the misfortune of criticizing Elon Musk on a technical matter. And that's what led to this, you know, blow up where he accused the diver of being a pedophile with apparently with no particular reason for that, except that he was really, really, really mad.
That's interesting. So it seems to be that he feels he has this one area in which he is unassailable. And yeah, if you come at him, you better not miss. Technically speaking,
I don't know what it is. I think he's somebody who for a lot of his career, and I guess as you point out, you know, a lot of his life has been in one way or another an insurgent, and it certainly has felt like an insurgent. So he had this moment when he started this company X.com, which merged with another company that had a product called PayPal, became PayPal, sort of became a co-founder and eventually CEO of PayPal. So he had this sort of brief moment where maybe he was kind of on top of the world, this, you know, running this successful tech company. He'd already sold a tech company, but he was fired, which is something people don't often remember by his sort of friend and maybe sometimes frenemy, Peter Thiel, who then became CEO. And basically, for a really long period, I mean, you know, nobody took this guy particularly seriously. And I think, you know, as often happens with people like that, he has become a powerful guy. And I think he has not quite figured out what that means. With Tesla, it's sort of like either on the verge of becoming, you know, this amazing new kind of company that swallows, you know, not just the auto industry, but maybe the energy industry along with it, and could be this amazing, you know, like a $1 trillion business, or it could go away because he can't make these, you know, Model 3s fast enough. And so I think there's this kind of weird duality. And as a result, you know, he kind of can't figure out, is he somebody who needs to punch back every time someone punches him? Or does he need to start adjusting to sort of a new position? He would hate to hear this, but it's a little bit similar to our president, you know, where the sort of willingness to break norms is both a real strength and arguably a weakness.
Let's talk about the sort of numbers. Like, is this, especially this latest behavior, is it bad for shareholders? I mean, the New York Post ran a column Saturday saying his tweets reveal, I mean, we're at the point now where the New York Post is saying, quote, Elon Musk is a total fraud, that these tweets reveal that he is a total fraud. I mean, that obviously, yeah, that is an extreme statement, because I would argue that developing, creating from scratch, developing and manufacturing a car in America today, let alone all of the stuff with space and SpaceX, that's real. That is a real accomplishment. But is that, like, yeah, when the cult of personality goes bad, how bad can it really go?
So we've seen versions of this argument made by some Wall Street analysts. And the idea is that basically looking at his Twitter feed and saying, geez, this guy does not seem to be super well balanced. Is this really the guy you want, you know, running a company? And some people have suggested, you know, Tesla should be worth less based on that, or you know, they're probably more extreme versions, you know, Elon Musk should be fired or something. That said, I think a lot of people, even people who are really down on this company, probably think it's worth more with this kind of volatile genius running it than just some suit from Detroit or whatever. And when you talk to people who are skeptical of Tesla, what they think is that at some point Elon Musk is going to resign because he can't run two companies at the same time, and he's clearly, you know, not enjoying himself. And if he does, the stock is going to fall. And if you talk to people who are really positive about Tesla, what they say basically is like Elon Musk can do anything, and that any particular problem that the company is going through now doesn't really matter because this guy's a genius. He's going to invent this entire industry. It's a bet on him. And so there's kind of a catch-22 on this, which is that, yes, on one hand, there are aspects of his behavior that have given people cause for concern. On the other hand, he's a lot of the reason that, you know, people want to work there, a lot of the reason people want to buy the car, he brings a lot to the table. So it's hard to see how it resolves itself.
What I think is so, I think we can agree that it is not normal the extent to which discussion of Tesla seems to be basically a war of trolls, right? Like Elon Musk's, yeah, followers went after Lynette Lopez because of her tough Tesla reporting. And then it would appear that Tesla haters and maybe short sellers, which we'll get to in a minute, drove Dan Neil of the Wall Street Journal off Twitter because of his good Model 3 review. I mean, this is not standard. I mean, I don't know. I've been around the tech industry for a while. I know a little something about fanboys. So maybe this is just more, yeah, public than it used to be because of Twitter, but it's pretty weird.
I think there's a lot to unpack here. I mean, I think it has to do, there's like a Twitter part of this story, right, where there are just changes in the media. I think also it's possible that Tesla is kind of uniquely polarizing partly because of the sort of cult of personality around Elon Musk, partly because of the, there are environmental issues and that sort of mm-hmm. thing. And I think when you have a company where the outcomes seem so divergent, as I said earlier, this could be, a $1 trillion company that's bigger than any car company and any energy company, or some crazy vision that the Tesla bulls might have, or we're all insane and it should really be worth zero, as some of the sort of more radical bears would argue. And so that just leaves a lot of room for argument.
Yeah. Well, let's get to more solid ground, I guess. How is the business doing? Or can we even tell? Shares are falling again on a report, I think today, that Tesla asked some suppliers to refund some previous payments to, help it get cash flow positive.
Yeah. So the cash position of the company is not great. And that's something that Tesla is trying to deal with in all sorts of ways, as you said, by trying to, get its suppliers to cut it a deal. And there were layoffs earlier this year. 9% of the staff were laid off. It seems like they might be, deferring certain investments or whatever to try to get as close to profitability or get to profitability as quickly as they can. In the past, Tesla has been able to raise as much money as it wants. This is like one of the superpowers that he has, and it's probably underrated. And I think the concern is that at some point investors are going to say, hey, this is basically a car company. And so at some point they may, just say, hey, like this company is worth a whole lot less. And mm-hmm. and so that doesn't mean Tesla goes away, but it could mean that it would be under pressures that it hasn't faced before. And those who are looking at Tesla as like, oh, this is a giant fraud, it's going to go away. I mean, it's pretty hard to imagine how it would just go away. In the same way, it's hard to imagine how it takes over the world, because really at the end of the day, I mean, they're already overvalued kind of relative to their peers. So mm-hmm. so if they're going to get to the next level, he's going to have to pull another, rabbit out of his hat. And it's not that he's done it before, so you never know. But there are definitely reasons to think like this is a maturing company. It's probably going to look kind of the way it does now, 5 or 10 years from now.
Hmm. And then let's get back into scary town just for a minute, because there has been a lot, like sort of an increasing level, this conversation about short sellers and the Tesla war on short sellers and vice versa. Elon Musk has talked a lot about that. His followers, put it all over the Tesla blogs. What is the deal with that?
depends who you ask.
To recap, right, exactly. To recap, there are accusations from the Tesla side that short sellers are essentially waging a campaign to tear down Tesla stock and potentially drive it into bankruptcy.
This is another instance of Tesla maybe trying to or struggling to or needing to grow up, because mm-hmm. the fact is lots and lots of companies have very vocal investors who are going after them. And, the same thing, Musk has complained a fair bit about the UAW, the United Auto Workers Union, which is trying to organize the company's plant in Fremont. And if you just stay in the Tesla sphere, you would think that this is the first car company that's ever had to deal with a union. And the fact is, like, every auto company has these issues. And part of being a real auto company is being able to deal with, grumpy investors and labor activists and to do all the kind of big company things.
Yeah. So if you had to put a $2 bet on where the company is in 5 years, do you think it's chugging along?
My Bloomberg, ethics policy prevents me from, making investments in companies I cover. But what I'll say is I think that as long as Tesla continues to put out products that are good, and I think the review in the Wall Street Journal that you brought up is a very good example of that. And as long as they keep making these cars and people like driving them, then I think, what's happening on the business side is perhaps like an argument about valuation, maybe who's the best CEO or whatever. But if you look back, on the history of this thing, when they started out, I mean, the conventional wisdom on electric cars is that it was like a huge, you know, boondoggle. And it's certainly the conventional wisdom, you know, in the automotive industry. And if Tesla dies or is brought down several pegs or something, it'll happen because another automaker will come out with a better electric car and figure out a better, you know, better economics to make it work. And in that sense, and, you know, in that sense, you'd say, well, oh, wow, Elon Musk, he really lost. But on the mm-hmm. other hand, like if his goal, and if we take him at his word, which I do, that his goal was to, you know, make a contribution to reduce carbon emissions and, you know, get the world off of oil or whatever, then I think you have to say, wow, I mean, he's accomplished something, even if maybe he didn't get all the way there. I mean, he set out to convince people that consumers would want an electric car. And I think he's been, you know, proven right in that. And maybe the rest, maybe it's all details after that.
In our interview, we talked a little bit about Elon Musk's war against short sellers. A quick reminder, a short sale is basically a bet that the price of a stock is going to go down and that you can profit by the decline in that stock price. Tesla is right now the most shorted stock on Wall Street, partly because some investors think it's overvalued. That is something Elon Musk has actually admitted, that he is benefiting from the high value of Tesla stock, but partly because of some of the issues the company is facing. Elon Musk, however, says people are not short selling because Tesla is in trouble. He and some Tesla fans think it's actually a concerted effort to bring down the company, maybe in order to profit on all of those short sales, or maybe for some other reason. If enough people bet against the company, the stock prices will fall, which could potentially bankrupt Tesla. Now, I came across this idea from someone on Twitter who sent me a blog post about this theory. We will put that up on our website, makemesmart.org. But honestly, and thanks for tweeting me, I wanted to know if there was any truth to this argument. James Clooney manages a firm based in London called Jupiter Asset Management, and we asked him if he thinks the theory is plausible, that there's essentially a conspiracy to take down Tesla.
I suspect there's some validity to it. It's a standard practice in markets. It's even got its own fancy name, predatory trading. It's a legal practice. It's also probably an ethical practice as well. There are some papers written on the subject of, is this an ethical or fair thing to do? It's how markets work. And the article obviously is discussing this, but saying it's a bad thing that this happens. Well, actually, it's a legal thing, probably a fair thing. It just is what it is.
It is what it is. All right. Well, Elon Musk is not loving that and has not been shy about calling out these short sellers. There certainly is this argument that that's the way shorts work. But it is unusual in some ways for CEOs to respond at the level that he has. Last month, in response to investors shorting on Tesla, Elon Musk tweeted, they have about 3 weeks before their short position explodes. And like I said, typically companies don't want to bring attention to the fact that people are short selling their stocks, but that might be part of the plan.
I think that there's a lot of storytelling going on.
Yes, storytelling. Epic narrative. And in fact, according to James, the vision of Tesla as a company is more exciting to both investors and clearly the media if it can be told as this epic story, the idea that Elon is overcoming so many obstacles to make his company a success. What is true is that this war of words and this epic narrative does have real financial implications.
So both sides are telling stories to try and get their argument to win in the markets. Tesla, I think, is a reflexive share. The lower the share price goes, the harder it is for them to raise cheap capital, the harder it is for them to win against Ford, GM, Nissan, etc. What happens in the stock market later affects what happens in the real world. And that's a really interesting situation. That's why what's happening in the stock market, this battle between fundamentalists and storytellers, is actually important to real people in the real world, not just to people who play the stock market.
One thing I should note is that so far the short sellers are losing here. Tesla, although its stock has fluctuated and has gone down, it's not down that much considering this flood of negative news. And of course, that stock is up about 200% over the last 5 years. Tesla is going to report earnings on August 1st. I suspect that will not calm the waters. In fact, just today, as I'm recording this, thestreet.com says the stock is, quote, more polarizing than ever. And its headline is that the Tesla narrative is going off the deep end this summer. I think, frankly, especially since it's Shark Week, that feels like the safest way to characterize the whole thing. But I would like to hear your questions and comments. Email us, makemesmart@marketplace.org. Get your Twitter fingers ready to defend me from trolls of all sides. I hope we'll hear more from you next, but first, we got to pay the bills.
With the launch of ChatGPT, Sam Altman and OpenAI reinvigorated our imaginations and fears of a world with artificial intelligence. While the company looked like a stunning success from the outside, a battle was brewing within on what the future of AI should be. Almost a year after launching ChatGPT, that battle erupted into a war when the company fired its charismatic CEO, Sam Altman. From Wondery, Business Wars is a podcast about the biggest corporate rivalries of all time. And in the newest season, host David Brown digs into the philosophical differences within OpenAI that culminated in Sam Altman's shocking firing, the chaos that followed, and what it means for the future and safety of AI in the modern world. Follow Business Wars on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts, with shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Wondery means business.
As a nonprofit news organization, Marketplace is able to do what we do every day thanks to funding from public radio stations, foundations, corporate underwriters, and listeners like you. Thank you to all the Marketplace investors who've contributed over the past year for helping keep public service journalism strong. We appreciate your support.
And now, dear listeners, it is time to hear from you.
Dear Make Me Smart.
This is Jess from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
I'm David Stork of Portola Valley, California.
I'm a doctoral candidate.
I'm getting married this November.
I work for a Fortune 500 company.
All right, let's not talk about Tesla for a minute. Lots of you wrote in about our design thinking episode, which was great. It was such a nice departure from, you know, I don't know, the news, and you loved it. So thank you. Our listener who just goes by Joey works in digital privacy and security and said that he's a little skeptical about design thinking to avoid unintended consequences. He writes, privacy and security problems I've seen come from teams focusing on use cases while missing what I call abuse cases. This seems like an inverse to normal design thinking, looking for what's possible if someone does not try to solve the real problem or goal and instead intentionally uses the product in a seemingly unproductive manner to accomplish some other objective it was not designed for, which is a great point. And Joey, I think that's kind of what we were circling around in trying to look at whether design thinking could be used to anticipate unintended consequences. Like, I feel like every design thinking team should have, you know, a spin-off team that basically has to think of the worst possible ways that someone could use something. But that's an excellent point. John Meluso left us this voice memo on the limits of design thinking.
So thank you so much for talking about design thinking, because it does work wonders in a bunch of contexts, from product design to nudge units in federal agencies. But unfortunately, the limits of design thinking arise right where you start dealing with complex systems. From experience, it's really difficult to sell spending that much time on even one decision in a complex system where teams make hundreds to thousands of those decisions every day. A great example is that recent Hawaii nuclear missile alarm story. Governments and companies don't usually spend even an hour figuring out the best way to design a menu for an operator to choose which alert message to send, even though it's an interface for sending a really important message that can affect lots of people. Because the software developers in charge of these decisions probably make dozens of them every day. Which is exactly why some engineering designers advocate design thinking as a good habit to teach engineers rather than more of a formal process.
also, I think, an excellent point, mainly in making the point about humans, which is that we can change the way we think all we want, but we probably still won't think of everything. Listener Karen Vainio from Issaquah, Washington, is a user experience designer who uses design thinking in all aspects of her life, some of which are very close to my own heart. She writes, quote, "I use it in my hobby. I'm a knitter and yarn spinner." You know, I love you, Karen. "So I employ design thinking for projects a lot. I use it when trying to get my kids to change their behavior by designing experiences that will push them toward good choices. My hope is to eventually use my design skills to help those who are disadvantaged to get a leg up. Karen, I would like more details on this designing experiences that push children toward good choices." That would be awesome. Thanks. And don't think we forgot. It's slightly possible that we forgot last week, but this week we have our Make Me Smart question.
Something I thought I knew.
That's a really tough question.
That's a big old hunker of a question.
Gosh, that is good.
All right, we're going to leave you with some inspiration here, a message that is not polarizing, but is actually an epic feat. Lisa Kempinen wrote us this message. She was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis 19 years ago. MS, of course, is a debilitating disease that affects the central nervous system and often leaves people in a wheelchair. Here's what Lisa had to say in answer to the question, "What is something you once thought you knew and you found out you were wrong about?"
19 years ago, I was a fit and super active 34-year-old. As a person whose identity was largely defined by what my body could do and how I looked, life in a wheelchair was clearly not a life for me. Well, as life would have it, 19 years later, most, if not all, of my life in public is in a wheelchair. However, contrary to what I believed to be true 19 years ago, I can be happy in a wheelchair. I love my life. To say that I don't like the wheelchair would be an understatement. Yet I now know I'm okay in it, and that it enables me to continue to participate in my very full and happy life.
And that right there is why we love the Make Me Smart question. Lisa, thank you so much for sending us that. And please send us your own. Feel free to record it. Feel free to type it. Actually, we'd love it if you record it. It's the best. And email it to us at makemesmart@marketplace.org. Of course, you can find us on the Twitter at Kai Rizdahl, at Molly Wood. Don't worry, he's still checking Twitter, even though he's in management training. I can guarantee it. And he will be back next week, and we'll see you then. Make Me Smart is produced by Shara Morris. Do us a favor and subscribe. Leave us a comment. Leave us a rating. Our senior producer is Eve Tro. Tony Wagner is our digital producer. This week's program was engineered by Ben Tolliday. Our theme music was composed by Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez. The executive director of On Demand is Sitara Nieves. And the senior vice president and general manager is Deborah Clark.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.